Okay. Raise your hand if you're not back yet. Okay. All right. Okay. All right. We have this one slotted for 6 and 7. And we keep going, well, we'll do a little 5 when we finish 4. We'll do a little 4 when we finish 5. But we didn't talk at all about the 5th step that much. And that rolls right into 6 and 7. So I don't want to talk much about 5th step, but let's go to it. You know, where's that new chapter into action? I just went to a conference where they decided instead of giving everybody a step, they gave everybody a chapter. And I was supposed to get how it works. And then Katie had to cancel. They said, oh, we're changing. We're giving you into action. And I went, oh, good. So let me see if I got this straight. I got 1 hour and 5 minutes to cover the 5th step, 6 and 7, the entire amends process, and 10 and 11. You know, it's like, I hope I don't run out of anything to talk about. You know, it's like, oh, wow. But in the 5th step, I'm just going to hit the briefest of bullet points. But I do like this. It talks a little bit about why we do it. You know, we're about to be these cast out. This requires action, which means we've admitted to God or ourselves the exact nature of our defects. This is perhaps difficult. This is the 5th step in the program of recovery. And it gives a good reason. It says if we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. I love this thing. I talk a lot about the man on page 73. And unfortunately, sometimes Katie will accuse me of being the man on page 73. But the man on page 73, it says, more than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. He's very much the actor. To the outer world, it presents his stage character. This is the one he likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. And, you know, one of my favorite stories about that is, and it says this inconsistency is made worse by the things he does on his sprees. And I had a sponsee picking up a chip out at the Austin Recovery Center one time, and I went out there on Sunday night to give him his chip, you know, and it was cool and everything, about, you know, a couple hundred people, and I gave him his chip. And the next day I'm at the Sprint store, and I got to get all prayed up before I go to the Sprint store. I need to really be, you know, spiritually centered, you know, because that's dicey ground for me. And I'm in there, and it looks like everything's going my way. It looks like everything's going to work out all right. And then this manager comes out from the back and blows up the whole deal. I mean, me and the guy behind the counter have got it worked out, and here comes this little assistant manager out of the back, and before I even know what's happening, I am rolled up on my knuckles on the counter like a gorilla, you know, and you're like saying something spiritual like, we got this, we don't need some Nimrod coming out of a cubicle in the back to screw up the whole deal. Something spiritual like that, you know. And so he burns off, and I'm standing there, and you know, a little hot, and I look over, and this guy's grinning at me all funny, and I go, man, they're getting me a little worked up in here. And he goes, you see me get my 90-day chip last night? And he's like, listen, brother, what you just saw was not exactly the spiritual principles of our program. And if you'll stick around just a few more minutes, you'll see what an active 10th step looks like, you know. Now I really got to clean this up, you know. But I always think about that when I talk about the done made worse by the things he does on his spree. But it talks a lot. When you go to 74, it talks about how we're hard on ourselves. I love this where it says the rule is we must be hard on ourselves but always consider of others. I got to keep that in mind when you hear this watered down dipshit stuff in the meetings like, I don't have to make amends to them because it says except when to do so would injure them or others, and I'm part of others, you know. And you're like, it says right here, the rule is that we're hard on ourselves and easy on others. So I'm obviously not part of others, you know. But we're going to talk about that when we get into the other one. But in bottom of 74 gives the 3 main qualities we're looking for in somebody that's going to hear a 5th step. It says it's important that he be able to keep a confidence, that he fully understand and approve of what we're driving at, and then he won't try to change our plan. You know, so, I mean, I hear people talking about reading inventory to somebody that's not, I mean, personally, I'd rather read it to somebody that is engaged in our process, and a step worker, and that knows how to take it from an entirely different angle. Because whether it's a 10th step or a 5th step, if I call my sponsor and I want to talk about Katie, and he starts talking about Katie, or you know, if you say, this is how you deal with a difficult wife or something like that, I'm a dead man. You know, I got to have somebody that's going to take me to, what was your part in this? Where did you set the ball rolling? Where did you make decisions based on self? Where, what's another way of looking at it? You know, is it possible you're doing it? Because if you just start saying, you know, here's how you deal with a difficult boss, or here's how you deal with a woman like that, or something like that, I'm in real trouble, you know. And it happened with Mark one time. I called Mark and I said, oh, Mark, Katie, is this? And he goes, well, I already told you I couldn't handle Katie. And I go, oh, dude, we can't go there. You know, I mean, I got to call somebody else, you know, because you start signing up to. But there's really not that much instruction in here on. Did we start? Yeah, we got the timer going. But there's not that much instruction in here on here in a 5th step. Most of the instructions on here, most of the stuff that's going to come in handy to me on here in a 5th step comes out of the process of the 4th step. It tells me what we're looking for, what we're driving at, what I'm driven by, what I'm trying to see. So a whole bunch of the review on how to hear a 5th step it comes out of the instructions in the 4th step. And basically, you know, here once it talks about who we're going to choose and why, it says, we pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. I called up Scott L. one time, and I said, you know, because Scott's quite a technician, and I love him, and I called him up, and I go, Scott, I feel like I take a pretty technical approach to the inventory process. I know the instructions that it lays out, and I go through and I do those instructions the way they're laid out. But where's the, you know, when it talks about what's the worst thing you ever did, where's the one thing that you said you were never going to tell anybody, those sorts of things. Where is that in the instructions? And he goes, it's in the 5th step. And I said, well, he goes, it says we pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Illuminating means to shine light upon every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. And that's the one thing that's kind of funny, because I didn't see it, because there's a lot of that stuff that didn't show up in resentment, didn't show up in a fear inventory, and didn't even come out in a sex inventory. But it's some of the stuff that I'm most blocked by. And when we get to the 10th step, it talks about that by this time we'll have intuitive thought, you know, and we'll be able to rely on our intuition and that sort of thing, you know. And I've had stuff in here in 5th step before where sometimes I ask it at the beginning, sometimes I ask it at the very end, sometimes I ask it in the middle. But, you know, I had this one guy that the guy I was talking about with the dreadlocks. I had the sponsee that when he cut his dreadlocks, they weighed 11 pounds. They were unbelievable. I love this guy. You know, I was at a treatment center one day, and here he comes, and you know, you're just going, oh my God, I think he's going to ask me to sponsor him. You know, and we were talking one day, and I go, Jamie, look, I said, I will rarely tell you what to do. I said, most of the time, if you have an issue, we'll talk about it. We'll talk about it. I'll bring you to God, and you and God are going to make the decision on what to do. But having said that, if you ever decide you want to take that ring out of your nose, you don't even have to call me on that one. You know, I was like, just knock yourself out. Well, he still got it, you know. But I love him. He's one of my best soldiers, you know. But when we're doing inventory, I'll tell you how far he's come. I watch this guy go from a hopeless heroin addict, drunken mess to a guy that flew up to Mount Olive, New Jersey to make amends on a 19-year-old arrest warrant He hadn't had a driver's license in 19 years. And when he was going up there to make it, he told me, he says, I don't know what they're going to do. He says, but the only reason they would put me in jail is if there's somebody in that jail that I'm the only one that could carry the message to them. That's watching the power of God in a man's life. That wasn't Jamie talking. That wasn't me talking. That was the power of God. That's the best I've ever done at getting through that story without breaking up, because to watch that happen, it's unbelievable. But we're doing inventory, and when we get to the end, I go, is that everything? And he goes, yeah, that's everything. And I go, nothing else. And he goes, no, that's it. And I go, nothing else you feel bad about? And he goes, no, I don't think so. I go, this is just intuitive. I go, well, that's funny. I said, because I know for me, I felt really guilty about when this happened. And he goes, there's something else. And so he comes with that, and that one didn't kill him. And he goes, there's something else, and he brings that too. And I go, okay. And then we hug it out, and he gets in his car, and he drives. He gets about 3 blocks away. My phone rings. He goes, there's one more thing. But that, it's amazing how it says we hang on to some of the worst items in stock. If things are blocking me, because it doesn't take any guts at all to talk about being in a hot tub with the Hawaiian Tropic girls. That's like that ever happened to me. But that's not the stuff that's blocking me. The stuff that's blocking me is way tackier than that. That's stuff that I'll brag about. But it's funny. I mean, most of this, when that power's gone, most of the stuff that I was afraid to talk about in my fifth step, I'd say from a podium now. I mean, it's like you're really free of that stuff. It doesn't really hold that kind of power over me. But we did that thing. And the only thing I want to say about the end of that, the fifth step promises are amazing, but there's a chunk. Instead of trying to hit all this super technical approach to these steps, I'm trying to hit the pieces that I either had new awarenesses in well down the road, or the pieces that you don't often hear people talking about. And one time, Mark came to the house on Thursday night. I tell you, man, I mean, there was never one time that he walked through the front door of my house on a Thursday night that I didn't. Boy, I miss that guy. There wasn't one time he walked through the front door of my house where I didn't know this is a big deal. The fact that Mark is leaving work and driving an hour to be at my house on a Thursday night is a big deal, and I knew Mark had been put in our lives, but I never realized that I'd been put in Mark's life. God doesn't bring two people together to just help one of them. He's way more efficient than that, and I got to speak at his funeral. There's 1,000 people at his funeral, and I was one of like 4 speakers, at the deal. But there was something real special with me and Mark. It was unbelievable. After he'd been dead a little while, I was listening to a talk by him, and I for years I've been going around saying the best day I've ever been involved in is this Thursday night meeting at my house. And I was listening to one of his last talks, and in the talk, see if I can get through this, he said the best day I've ever been involved in is this Thursday night meeting with these guys. And I was like, God dang. Yeah, it's pretty strong, Mark. I knew it was the best day I'd ever been involved in, but I never dreamed that he'd say it was the best day he'd ever been involved in. We're bringing it real at that table, and I've never been quite the same since Mark died. But we're sitting here one day, and I started talking about 6 and 7, and somehow Mark got on this rant about that, and I mean, Mark had a clarity. To me, for my money, he was like a modern-day mystic. I mean, when you talk about a guy that was a walk-in relationship with God, which is what I understand a mystic to be, somebody that's having an experiential experience with God. I mean, one time we were driving to the Man-to-Man conference, not Mark, but me and four other guys, and everybody in the car had over 20 years except for one guy that had 3.5 years. We plugged in this Mark Houston CD. We had a 135-mile drive, and I swear to God, we stopped that CD 25 times. You know, where you'd be listening to it and go, wait, whoa, what did he just say? You know, and he would just come out with it so fast. And so he went on this rant about the hour at the end of the fifth step. And Chad, I was sitting at this end of the table. Mark's sitting at this end of the table. And Chad is sitting right here. And Chad's looking at Mark, and he's looking at me, and he's looking at Mark, and he's looking at me like, are you getting this? And Chad told me later, he goes, I think I heard about 15% of what Mark was saying there that night. And he said, that 15% revolutionized that hour at the end of the fifth step for me. Because I don't know about you guys, but you know, when it talks about returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour. I used to just kind of phone that in. I used to call it the hour after the fifth step. Now I call it the hour at the end of the fifth step. I tell guys, don't plan dinner after we do the fifth step, because you ain't done until you go home and spend this hour. And it says, returning home, we find, this is at the bottom of page 75. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we've done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know Him better. You know, there's a clue. In the book, whenever it says we ask, it's usually a prayer. And if it says we ask God, it's always a prayer. And when it says we thank God, that's a prayer. And I remember working with a sponsee one time, and I decided we're going to do everything, and I'd read a line like that, and I go, that's a prayer. And I go, let's do it. You know, and you can see him kind of tripping a little bit, because he's like going, I could tell that's the first time he's ever seen that. You know, he's 17 years sober. You know, I don't know. But it says, taking this book down from our shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. Now, frankly, I don't know why when I just finished my fifth step, my book's on the shelf. But I tell guys to put the book up on the shelf and take it back down off the shelf. It's ridiculous. And I insist on it, it's the exact same story, because I put mine up on the shelf, and then I look at it for a second, and then I pull it back down again, you know, and it says, but what Mark did was, it says, carefully reading the first five proposals, we ask if we've admitted anything. And what he went into this rant about was, he said, I'm going to consider the first five proposals in all their implications. You know, is this stuff really true for me? Am I bodily and mentally different from my fellows? Do I have a physical allergy coupled with a mental obsession? When I stop drinking, do I get so uncomfortable that it creates a mental obsession that drives me to drink? Am I truly powerless over this? Have I lost the power of choice? And if that's the case, is my only solution a spiritual experience? Are those my two choices, to live life on a spiritual basis or die an alcoholic death? And if that's the case, have I come to believe that there's a power greater than me that could move me beyond where I am? And if I have I entered into this, am I an actor who wants to run the whole show? Am I in this delusion that if everything would have just gone right, is this the way my life goes? Do I operate off the toolkit of self-will? This is what usually happens. Is that what usually happens for you? Is that your experience? Is that your belief based on your experience with what you've read in this book? And is this true for you? And if that's true, have you made this? Have you decided to quit playing God? Do you believe that you got no shot without this God? And have you made that deal in the third step? Are you convinced that your life based on self-will can hardly be a success? And all of a sudden we're running through all this stuff. And you know, have you entered into this deal where He'll provide what you need if you stay close to Him and perform His work well? And have you taken that experience into the fourth step inventory? And have you looked at the way self shows up in resentment? Have you seen the way it shows up in fear? Have you seen the failure of self-will? Have you seen the way sexual self-will manifests when the sexual instinct is aroused? And all of a sudden, this hour became a serious piece of business, you know, where you're sitting there, you know, because I used to just go home, kind of flip through We Agnostics or something, because they told me one time it has to be a 60-minute hour. So, you got to do something for an hour, you know. But, I mean, now all of a sudden it became a serious piece of business. And have I seen these things from an entirely different angle. Have I learned to have compassion for these people in the compassion exercise? But more importantly, did that compassion move me to a place where I could see where I'm selfish and dishonest and self-seeking and frightened? And if those are the case, have I seen this over and over and over and over in my inventory? Have I basically, because, you know, at the end of the fifth step, there's a thing where it says we are delighted in the promises. I had a sponsor call me one time. He goes, "Charlie, I'm not delighted. You know, I feel like we just spent 3 hours you rubbing my face and how selfish and self-centered I am." And you know, it's funny, I was doing a third step talk one time, and this guy that's a taper that we both know, he comes up and he goes, "Guy," he goes, "you know, that third step talk makes me feel bad." But I was like, wouldn't it be worse if you were in trouble and you came over and you read inventory to me, and I went, "God dang, man, I just don't see anything you could be doing different, you know? You're really screwed, you know? We want to take inventory, but we want to beat ourselves." That's why it says we avoid worry, remorse, or morbid self-reflection, because the ego doesn't care. The ego is a shapeshifter. And the ego doesn't care whether I'm thinking I'm wonderful or if it's swinging. You show me some chinks in the armor in the inventory process, and it'll slam all the way over to I'm a turd that doesn't deserve to draw air, right? I don't even, you know, deserve to be here. And I'm just as self-obsessed over here as I am over here. It's just a different form of it. So it says we avoid worry, remorse, morbid self-reflection. All this leading up to 6 and 7, and because 6 and 7, I got to tell you an interesting story, what I think is an interesting story about 6 and 7. Some of you guys have heard of these Woodstock. This is Woodstock of the West Coast here. Bob D came up with this concept for what he called the Woodstock of AA. And it was an amazing power-packed format because he was bringing in a bunch of popular speakers, but instead of having them get up there and tell their story, everybody gets a step. You know, like the first one I went to, it just blew my mind. I mean, I wound up taking a nap during dinner because otherwise, when are you going to rest? It was like, are you going to skip Sandy Beach or are you going to skip Tom Ivester? You know, or you want to skip Clint Hodges or Clancy? You know, and I was like, I can't keep my eyes open, but I'm going to have to lay down while everybody else is at dinner, you know. And it was that kind of a format. They had another one, and it's become a popular form. And so Katie Lorenz is one of our favorite guys. He comes from that Don Pritz lineage of sponsorship and speaks that language. And we're at a conference one time, and the guy that was taping it organizes some of these Woodstocks. And he asked Katie, he says, "Hey, would you like to speak at the Woodstock at, you know, I don't know where it's the Woodstock of Waco or whatever, you know, but I mean, it's, you know, there's a lot of Woodstock events now, but it's a big one." And she says, "Yeah." And he says, "I'd like for you to do step 6 and 7. Am I the only one that would run out of bullets after about 5 minutes on 6 and 7? You know, you're like, I mean, you think about it when you go, "Hey, Tarek, how'd you like to come speak at the Woodstock of Atlanta next year?" You go, "Oh, that'd be awesome. Thanks." "We want you to do an hour and 5 minutes on 6 and 7. You're like, dang. I might have to juggle a little bit or something. You know, because, and so here's the best part. Katie goes back in there. She tells Lorenz he gave me 6 and 7. Then she walks back in there where the guy is, and she says, "You know, I'm really a lot better at step 3. And she is. She's amazing at step 3. And he goes, "Well, okay, yeah, I'll put you on step 3. She's like, "Oh, good." And she walks back out where Lorenz is sitting, and she goes, "I got him to move me to 6 and 7. And Mike goes, "Oh, that's too bad. It would have been interesting to see where God took you with 6 and 7. Katie's like, now she's a producer of confusion rather than harmony, because she's got to march back in there, you know, and go, "Give me 6 and 7, I'll figure it out." So we had, like, the reason I tell this story is because we had, like, almost a year to get ready for this talk. So it's not like just going, "Hey, hop up here and do 6 and 7. It was like, I got a year to consider it. And we, and we, and, which helps because I if you ask me to give a technical talk, I'm going to take a technical approach to it. You know, I'm not just going to get up there at a Woodstock and just wing it or tell my AA story or something like that, even though I've seen plenty of that happen. There's some people, they give them a step and they just tell their story. They don't, you know, God knows I judge no man. But I've seen it happen where you're like, well, did you read the menu? You know, you had a step, you know. But I digress. So we start working on 6 and 7, and we started talking about it, started having a lot of conversations with it, and started doing our own, looking at it in our own inventory. And we started talking, so I'm talking to Myers about it, and I'm talking to Lorenz about it, and I'm talking, and what basically came out of my current understanding of 6 and 7, you know, because it's funny. I'm a big book guy. There are people that, well, like one time my best friend, I got an FU out of him because we were talking one day and he goes, Charlie, I don't know how you take somebody through the steps without the 12 and 12. And I said, I believe that's true, Mike. I believe you don't know how to take somebody through the steps without the 12 and 12. And he's like, you know, but... But the thing you hear most commonly is you'll hear people say, well, you got to have the 12 and 12 for 6 and 7, or you got to have it for 11. And the funny thing for me is I find the 12, I don't hate the 12 and 12. I think I've become quite open-minded about it, you know. Because I went from I don't dig it to it's not all bad to now I tell you there's a ton of good stuff in the 12 and 12. I just don't think it's the instructions for how to recover. I think it's a great book that I'd give my doctor or my pastor or a friend that wanted to know how to something about alcoholism. But it's not what I'd give a new guy that's trying to recover. I just and I said way more than I should, but I ain't moving, you know, until I do. But so what, and the funny thing is, to me, the 7th step in the 12 and 12 is one of the weakest essays in there, you know? It's like when I read, I'm still going, aren't I? Okay. It's like an essay on humility, you know? The step says, humbly asked him, and somebody goes, humbly, huh, humility. Let's write an essay on humility. And I think it's a great essay on humility. Doesn't have a damn thing to do with what we do in the 7th step, But what I should have said without all this editorial comment is that there's plenty of information in the big book to do step 6 and 7, because people say a lot of times there's only two little short paragraphs in the big book on 6 and 7, but we've spent 75 pages preparing for those two little paragraphs. And so what I've come to believe is that, remember with that hour we did at the end of the review, it says if we can answer to our satisfaction, answer what? All these questions. We then look at step 6. We've emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can he now take them all, every one? And I've written right here, do I believe this? Do I believe, you know, back in on page 13, Bill talks about my problems being removed root and branch. Up to now, I've been trimming the branches of my problems, but now, you know, we're getting down to the root of the problem. And it says all these things that we have admitted are objectionable. Now, where did I admit that these things were objectionable? In the fourth column of that four-column inventory. I've seen over and over and over again where I'm selfish and dishonest and self-seeking and several other words that start with self. Inconsiderate. I work with inconsiderate a lot because I say, you know, part of living a life based on selfishness and self-centeredness, I have very little awareness of my effect on other people. And sometimes I know something was inconsiderate because I never considered it. You know, I mean, it never even occurred to me that this might hurt your feelings or something like that. And I've seen it over and over. So the and I got to close this up real fast. I'll end with this. there's four things that I see going on in 6 and 7. the things that I've had brought into my consciousness in the end of the inventory process, are these objectionable to me? There's something that happens when I get awareness of them and they're objectionable to me. Now, sometimes they become objectionable to me when I realize that they're objectionable to Katie. It's not just objectionable to me. If I'm doing something that's destroying her self-esteem, or, you know, if I love this person, if it bothers them that much, it should bother me. You know, so these things, is it objectionable to me? And if this behavior is objectionable to me, the second piece of it is, do I have the power to change it on my own? With these things that I've seen that are objectionable, do I have the power to change them on my own? And there's a lot of those things that clearly I don't have the power to change them, because I've seen them and I've tried to not do them and I do them. You know, I say stupid stuff sometimes. I know this probably doesn't happen in Georgia, but you know, and if it's objectionable and I don't have the power to change it, the third piece is, am I willing to let God change it in whatever way he sees fit? I don't get to instruct the Creator on how he should do this, right? It's just, if it's objectionable to me and I can't change it, am I willing to let God change it in whatever he sees fit? And if those three things are in place, then I take it to God in the seven-step prayer. And that's when we say, we close our meeting at the Primary Purpose Group with the seven-step prayer, where it says, my Creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, the good and the bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single twist of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. And the next thing it says, we have then completed step seven, and it rolls right into eight and nine. You know, and people talk about, are you one of these guys that believes in taking people through the steps really fast? And I'm like, well, not really fast. I mean, I don't know what it means, but like you said, you can't launch slowly, you know? You know, and I think it would be, a lot of those people, I think it would be a surprise to them to know that you're going to come over to my house on a Thursday afternoon with your fourth step. We're going to do the fifth step. You're going to go home and spend the hour at the end of that. You're going to take those considerations into six and seven, and you're going to write your eighth step list that night. And that night, you'll be on 9, 10, 11, and 12. I mean, I think that would be a surprise to a lot of people. It can go like that, you know, that it really is rolling out. You know, that we could do from the fourth step to the 10 and 11, you know, that day. So I don't know, you know, where you're supposed to take your foot off the gas. And I'm not saying everybody does it that fast, but I've done an awful lot of them like that with good results. But that's really all I got for six and seven. I appreciate it, y'all. Thanks.
We're entirely ready to have a guy remove all these. Let me say I'm Ralph White, alcoholic. Hello. Since we tape it. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings, six and seven. And many of you probably know that when they started writing the book, Bill Wilson, started writing the book. Initially, his charge was two chapters. There is a solution was going to be the first chapter, and Bill's story was going to be the second chapter. And had two chapters. And then they started wanting to get this funding, and they started doing this hustling to get the rest of these chapters out. Commissioned him to do some more chapters. And he wrote, and sometimes if you listen, it would seem that some of the favorite chapters he considered, okay, I got We Agnostics out, I got more about alcoholism out. Bill's story originally was not going to lead off. There's a solution was going to lead off. This guy that came in later to edit came in and said, no, we're going to put you on the front end, and brought Bill's story at the front end. But so they finally, and Bill did There's a Solution, he did these other chapters, and they were waiting. He said, damn, now I got to put, you know, okay, push is come to shove. I got to really talk about what this is we do. What's your program of recovery, dude? You know, okay, ass against the wall, you know, it's time. Should have get off the pot time. And he's laying in the bed, and he wrote on a napkin the 12 steps. You know, and many of us consider what we do, that work of that he put in, divinely inspired. And the reason we think it's divinely inspired is, A, it was beyond his pay grade. It was beyond the pay grade of all those who did that. You know, they started writing the book in April of 1938. Bill Wilson was the longest person sober, and he got sober in December of 1934, due to math. So the oldest person was 3 years. Who in this room right now has exactly 3 years of sobriety? Okay. You in charge. Who's got less than 3 years of sobriety? We want you to take all of you guys out in the hall, and we want you guys to come back with a draft of a manuscript that's going to change the lives of millions of people. And people laugh at it, and I think there was something about the audacity of that 3 year period that will enable somebody. If you had been around later, I'd be like, oh, that's a daunting task. I've been around. But that, yeah, we can do this. We can do this, you know. And they went out three. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? You know, sometimes I don't even want to send a sponsee out, you know, for Star. I don't drink Star, but that's just a good phrase to say, you know, with 3 years. But 3 years was the oldest. So one of the reasons we say this thing was divinely inspired is because it was beyond the pay grade. And they put things in the book that should not have been in the book. There was no way of knowing. There was no way of knowing. So much of what's written in the book is optimistic. But we've been able to look back on it. Now, Charlie made light of Bill, and Bill Wilson, who wrote the book, primary author of the book, and some years later, had another surrender. Charlie likes to talk about that second surrender. And he had another. Is this all to this recovery thing? This just staying. So is this it? He suffered from depression a lot. He called it emotional sobriety, the next frontier. And he wrote the 12 and 12, which is a series of essays about the steps. Now, the reason that I'm not going to take my esteemed colleague's position is the same man that authored this authored that.
At about four.
You know, stop.
Sorry.
Who's got the mic?
You got the mic. I surrender.
See, the problem with doing a deal like this is then you get two personalities up here. And I used to be the baby going out doing these things with some older guys that I really respect. And a lot of times their experience was different from mine. And I would feel like I can't give my true experience because I don't want to feel like I'm in conflict. The good thing about Charlie and me, because we got some diverse, we come from the same place with diverse methods. But the good thing about me and Charlie, and people don't have to know, is this my boy. So I don't have to feel like, oh, I'm stepping on toes if I say my approach is there. I don't have to feel like nothing. You know, I don't have to feel like nothing. So you guys don't get to understand that kind of interplay and that kind of freedom sitting up here. Because a lot of times I sit with people and we cool, but I'm kind of stepping on eggshells. Because me, there are some differences. And one of the reasons why 6 and 7 will seem somewhat difficult sometimes is they are not the steps that lend themselves to technique. They don't lend themselves the technique. Joe and Charlie, when they used to do the test, they would say the reason it wasn't a lot written about 6 and 7, they called them the pick and shovel steps. They say a pick and a shovel don't come with instructions. You know, you don't have instructions for them. You just kind of know. I'm going to submit something for you guys' consideration when it comes to 6 and 7. I want you to consider that not only are there more than two paragraphs about 6 and 7 in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm going to submit the whole 164 pages or about steps 6 and 7. I'm going to submit that the whole 164 pages have to do with character defects and the reduction of. This is an integrated series of spiritual actions that are not standalone. The reason we give them numbers is to highlight them at certain points. But this idea of reduction of character defects is everywhere. What is selfishness and self-centeredness but looking at my chief character defects? What is this idea that we talk about when we were in, which Charlie talked about so much in this playing God? What's my chief character defect? I want to play God. I want to be, you know, the difference between God and me? He ain't never woke up and thought like he was me. you know, this God plan. So this idea of 6 and 7, you know, when we talk about 6 and 7, because I love 6, I used to be scared as hell if they would give me 6 and 7. And it just, a light bulb just came. The whole book is 6 and 7. The whole thing is 6 and 7. And this deal about 6 and 7, most of the time, I want to run back to 4. When I'm under stress, when something's going on, I'm in another one of these situations that I've been in time after time after time after time. She ain't acting right. She tripping. She doing this. Sponsor, I'm on the phone. You know, man, I need to go back, pen the paper. I need to go back to this. And what it really is I'm getting the reality of my situation that I don't give a damn how much you write. I don't give a damn how much you talk to sponsor. I don't give a damn how much you go and you talk to your buddies and your road dogs and you get a new spot. I don't give a damn how much you do that. Dude, is he everything or is he nothing? Second surrender. Charlie calls it the second surrender in the third step. I'm going to submit it's a second surrender in step 6. It is the overwhelming idea that I cannot do this myself. God, take it. Take it. I can't do it. I can't. Take this from me. Where do I get to that? Did I get to not drinking by not drinking? I got to not drinking by drinking. Did I get to not smoking by not smoking? I got to not smoking by smoking. I got to be smoked out. I got to be drunk out. I got to be whatever it is. I got to be holed out. I got to be tricked out. I got to be gambled out. I got to be porned out. And then I get on my knees and say, writing ain't going to do it. That's the point. That's 6 and 7. When you hear defect, when you hear defect, you know, when you hear the word defect, you know, in a commercial sense, what do we think about when we hear something is defective a lot of times? You think about an automobile, right? And when a car is defective, particularly a model or something, what happens? Recall where? Why? Because a car don't work on itself. 6 and 7. Recall the manufacturer. Car don't work on itself. Car don't work on itself. So I look at when I look at my 5th step and I go 4 and 5 and I look at my 5th step and I get to the 6th. God, you got deuce prostate. Now, how many people been to the same? My sponsor, you know, Bob says, ain't nothing new. Ain't nothing new. By the time you at counseling, this ain't new. This old business. Who got new business? Who got something that's going on in their life that's new business? Who got something going on in your life right now that you've been here before? Who's up against a wall right now, been there before? Who doing some shit and said, God damn, how I end up here again? Again. Again. And it's enough of those agains that take me. See, this is why, this was my boy. And Charlie, you know, that's why my sponsor says you got to know when to get off the donkey. The writing takes me to the power. Now it's time to go to the power because I think that every other effort that's mine is, that's me thinking, I got, that's human power. That's human power. Charlie, let's talk it out. Let's talk it out, dog. And me and Charlie talk a lot. Let's talk it out. We can do all the talking, and what that will allow me to do is to see what I got to take to the power. Because if I don't talk it out, I'm going to take the wrong thing to the power. Damn, God, you need to get her to see things my way. No, God, I need to bring this shit. No, I know what I need to bring to you. Charlie was so on point today when he was talking about my selfishness. He said something and it cracked my heart. He said, how could my own selfishness, you know, crack my girl? Somebody as strong as Kate. How could I, you know, bam. That's what I take to God. Not she tripping. God, you need to do something. No. God. Here your boy is again. I came to you in the 3rd step. Do something with me. Here I am on the doorstep again. This is an integrated series of actions, this whole deal. So it's not standalone. So when he highlighted, he just put numbers to the step. But the steps ain't steps. The steps ain't the action. The step, they're just the titles. They're just the titles. When you do 6 and 7, that's just a title. You know, you don't do, when I go to God with this, that's just the title of it. The way I'm doing it is the rest of my life. The book talks about it's a lifetime deal. You know, and I'm here to tell you, I'm a grown, you know, I'm 66 years old and I'm stuck with, but check this out. That's also good news. Don't trip off that. What entity do we know that's without defect? God, right? To be human is to be defective. There is a wonderful promise in the, where he says, take away, but God is so, this power is so awesome that since I have to be defective, he'll use it. Take away the ones except for the ones that'll make me useful. My sponsor says, God, Ralph, that defect of character deal that you tripping so hard about, he said, it's a design feature. He said, it's a design feature. A lamp is designed to be plugged into an outlet. It ain't designed to power itself. I'm designed to be plugged in. I'm designed to be plugged in. If I don't have no defects, I don't go to the power. Why would I? If I don't have defects, and if my defects could be solved by spots, I don't need a power. If my defects could be solved by fourth and fifth, I don't need a power. The paper's the power. The pen is the power. Spots is the power. Design feature. I'm built that way. I'm built that way. That's the portal. That's what keeps me. That's the 6 and 7. 6 and 7. We smudge in the window. That's the portal. That's what keeps me in contact with this power. That's what most connects me with the power. I don't get connected to the power when I close a deal. When I get a wire to put some money in the account, I'm not connected to the power then. Oh, but let that crew walk out on me. Okay, God, everything or nothing time. Your boy is back. He back. He's back. When are you most connected? Oh, you know, he's back. That's the design feature. I think that's the portal. I think that's the connector. I think that's what puts me in touch with my power. I'm designed to be plugged in. I'm not designed for self-propulsion. I'm not designed to do all this on my own. Design feature. Embrace it. Quit tripping. I'm, you know, I'm not tripping. I'm 66. Check this out. I'm going to always have some of my defense. When Charlie talked about Mark Houston and he broke down, and I know the man. I know the man. The things that I do, that we do on Sunday mornings, Tamisha, comes directly from that whole line of guys. I know him. Sat on one-on-one, know him. And still, when Charlie did that, Ralph's one of the defects that I still have. And it ain't it, that one ain't one of my glaring ones. So it surprises me when it shows up. You know, when jealousy shows, I was sitting up here saying, damn, I wonder if I'll have a sponsee that ever talks about me like that. And I didn't mean it funny, I meant it real. I wonder if another man will talk about me like that. You know what I'm saying? I was like, damn. I wonder. And that defect of character right there, when you talk about God, take away every single defect of character except for the ones that will make me useful, that defect of character right there, it makes me want to, you know, goddamn, Terry. Now I don't want to let him down, you know. Now I don't want to show my ass in front of him. You know, we better together than we are by ourselves. That defect of character, that one right there. I want somebody to talk about me like that. Okay, God will use that one. That one ain't necessarily a bad one, you know. Use that one. That idea, what I think somebody thinks. Oh, but isn't that a wonderful thing? Mark ain't gone as long as Charlie's here. I was like, damn, it would be good to just have one somebody. And as a result of doing the damn deal, doing the dance, doing the thing. So this 6 and 7, man, it's real for me. You know, it's huge. It has become my favorite thing since my eyes opened to, it ain't two paragraphs. Bill just numbered it right there. He's given us, you know, let's go to the pivot point. Where's our pivot point? Third step. I offer myself to you. Okay. Relieve me of the bondage of self. How are we doing that, Ralph? Okay. First, I'm going to see what's blocking me. I'm going to do this inventory thing. Then I'm still in this. Now I'm going to talk about it with somebody. I'm still smudging the window. Now we're going to put a number on it just so you know. But all of this is a continuum. Now we're looking at it like they're discrete acts, and that's the deal. We're looking at them like they're discrete acts, but they're really a continuum. They're really the whole deal. And he just put a number on it. I want you to also know, Ralph, and pay attention, that there are some defects that's going to come up for you. And this is also part of this window wiping process. You know, the defects of character that come up. But you built that way. You built that way. I suspect I'm never going to be Charlie's height. I think I'm not hitting another growth spurt. You know, that ain't. So ain't no need me wanting to be. I suspect that I will always have some stuff, and Leslie sees some of it, you know. I suspect I'll be at a conference somewhere. Charlie peeped me. You know, I don't know what name he gave me. You know, I'm kind of the hand up guy, but I'm the other guy. Give me a name, Charlie. I'm the guy that's standing in conversation and two or three people come up to me and I leave the conversation while you talking. You know, and Leslie sees that in me all the time. And I'd be like, I'm gone. Next time, they be like, Leslie still be there with him. She's like, Ralph, what happened? I lose interest. I'm selfish. I'm that in me, and I don't see it. But I suspect I'm always be that way. I'm who I am now. It's gonna get reduced, and for me, the best I do is I demonstrate different. I'm not gonna feel a lot different now. I don't make excuses for it, but I'm in the fourth quarter. You know what I'm saying? I'm in the fourth quarter. A lot of what it is in me is going to be in me. I'm that guy. You know, I'm still a guy that cringes anytime any woman. My wife could be, my girl it could be, my mama it could be, my daughter it could be. You know, if they say something like, we need to talk. Ooh, those are chilling words for me. Just out of a woman's mouth. Can we talk? We need to talk. I'd be like, oh, man, really? You know, So there are things in me that's, oh.
Didn't we just do that?
Oh, but the wonder of the power. The wonder of the power. That 6 and 7. That recognition of defects. You know, that recognition, I think that's big. You know, that's huge for people like us. You know, the recognition and the desire. You know, when you read about it in the 12 and 12, which is, you know, one of the places in there, there is some good stuff. And what it talks about is patient improvement. You know, in the 12 and 12, it talks about patient improvement. You know, and that's the goal here. Now, it says set the goal is the ideal. And it says, that, you know, you won't ever have a perfect release from these defects of character like I had a perfect release from alcoholism. One of the reasons why is I don't believe alcoholism was a defect of character. One of the reasons is because alcoholism was really, 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 really. And Bill, he shied away from calling it a disease. If you look in the book, he'll call it an illness. He'll call it a malady. He shied away from that, didn't want to get into that whole medical, you know, discussion and debate, you know, but, and he talked about getting perfect release because most of the time, my character defects, they come from instincts. for approval. That's a big one for me. My biggest character defect is, and probably always will be, you know, what I think you think, and seeking approval. I was walking around one time, early in recovery. My brother Ron, practicing attorney, and people all used to say they're twins. Ronnie's a year younger than me, but people would say it anyway. And I was going to meet one day, and somebody said, "Oh, aren't you the lawyer?" And without stop skipping a beat, I'm like, "Yeah, yeah, yeah. What the hell?" You know, I'm better at that. I'm who I am. I'm who I am. You know, I was standing outside of a meeting many years ago, many, many years ago in my home group. Charlie opened the door. Ladies, you probably won't believe it, but even leaving a spiritual meeting, a spiritual gathering, great meeting, in the parking lot, the fellas are still engaging sometime in some locker room, you know, conversation. And so I want to be a big boy. I'm about a year and a half sober at that time. I've always been I play ball. I've been a popular guy and the rest of that. But I've never been, you know, gangster guy, tough guy, hard guy. I've always been the square guy. But, so I want to be with the fellas. And I'm in the parking lot, and the fellas are talking the locker room talk. And I'm standing in the circle with them. And one of them referred to a lady in a less than complimentary way. And I responded in kind. "Yeah, man." And a dude's head snapped around like, "Ralph, that don't even look right coming out your mouth," which helped me because I'm hypersensitive to your reactions to me. So I realized not only was I phony, but I was busted being phony, and it didn't work. And it didn't work. And I went home, felt for a week. I couldn't, because I'm hypersensitive. Oh man, what was that about? Dude, I wasn't trying to be that guy. I was really trying to get my feet put on a whole different basis. But, you know, coming out to life, anybody in here that's new, it's going to be some stuff. It's going to be some bumps and bruises. Of course, I didn't know it at the time. I didn't know I was, you know, when the caterpillar is coming out and you know, you don't know that, you know, there's that whatever that other, the pupa stage is an ugly stage. You know, before you come out a butterfly, you still got that ugly stage up in there, and you know, you transitioning. And you know, and so I'm up in there, and it stayed with me 2 or 3 weeks. And coming out the back end of that was the start of a process for what has happened for me in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was the start of a process of finding my own voice and walking my own walk and singing my own song in my own voice. I'm who I am. I'm who I am with the fellas, and I'm who I am with the late. I'm who I am with the tough guys. I'm who I am with my sponsees. I'm who I am at the. I'm who I am, and that's a journey for me, because I am. Charlie said it about something else, but he could have said it about me. I'm a shapeshifter. I'm a chameleon. I'm a guy that fits where it fits. You know, when it's time to be, yeah, I'm talking shit over here. Yeah, I'm schoolboy over here. Yes, I'm businessman over here. Yes, I'm sponsor over here. Yes, I'm son over here. You know, yes, I'm son-in-law over here. You know, I'm that guy. But now I'm singing my own song in this deal. Defects and all, defective and all. You know, but that idea in 6 and 7, you don't want to get comfortable with that. This whole thing. This whole idea of defects of character, it's the portal. It's my connector. It's the connective tissue between me and the power. That's where I go. That's where I go. And it is not one, it is the same as step one. You can't sit down, there are no instructions for step one. Step one is an experience. And there are no instructions for the sixth step. It is the other surrender. It is the prostate position that I get to based on continue failures and showing up of these defects. It is the idea, finally, you can't get rid of these. You can't write that away. You can't sponge that away. You can't talk that away. Recall the manufacturer. That's what I do with my defects. Okay, we done. Mm-hmm.